The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good afternoon, Anthony Reich. How are you?
Hello. Very good. Nice to talk to you this afternoon. I hope those people who are fasting are having a good, meaningful fast. Of course, the 17th of Tammuz, the start of the 3 weeks. This is the slippery slope towards Tisha B'Av, some people would say, right?
Yep. It's not even such a slippery slope. It's a slog. It's hard.
No, it's so a bit of a slog, but anyway, a very significant day. Yeah.
No, 100%. By the time Tisha B'Av comes, I'm already sick with anxiety over it. Anyhow, Anthony, let's talk about the news. The number of people infected with corona in Israel continues to rise exponentially in Israel's second wave. Some Israeli cities are set to be locked down. So which are the cities that are affected?
Well, there have been a number of cities that are in discussion at the moment, or that the government has been in discussion about, due to a large increase in the number of people who are infected in those cities. Beitar Elite was the first place to be affected that went into lockdown yesterday. There were reports of hundreds, if not thousands, of people escaping from the place before it went into lockdown. It is an ultra-Orthodox town, where apparently people were afraid to be caught up if they were locked down. And so people were literally escaping from there in order to get away from the lockdown, which seems to really question what the point of the lockdown is, if that's what's going to happen, if people are just simply going to escape and potentially bring corona to other parts of Israel. But the other areas that have been mentioned for potential lockdown include Lod and Ramleh, and also Ra'anana, where there's been a massive increase in the number of people infected. The latest that I've heard about the possible lockdown of these towns and cities is that the government is now considering the possibility of just highlighting a few neighborhoods within each of those locations and locking those down, areas which are considered to be higher hot point, greater hot point areas in those cities, rather than locking down the entire place. I'm not sure how effective that's going to be. Modi'in Elite, by the way, is another place that's also been considered for lockdown due to an increase in the number of cases there. But all in all, the situation, unfortunately, in Israel has not been good. 1,200 new cases just over the last day or so. More people have passed away, unfortunately. There are now more than 100 people in serious condition in hospital, so that's a massive increase. Even the chief of general staff has gone into lockdown. He's been quarantined due to having come into contact with somebody with corona. I think that Benny Gantz is also in a similar position. So there's so many people who are also in quarantine. 10,000 IDF soldiers currently quarantined, either with corona or having come into contact, direct contact with people with corona. So it becomes quite a serious situation. And we certainly hope that there will be some relief over the coming days and weeks from what has become a very, very significant second wave of corona in Israel.
Gosh, it's a crazy situation. I mean, what was that figure from the army? How many people in the army?
10,000. 10,000 IDF soldiers at the moment.
I mean, just think of managing that. Because, I mean, the transport system in Israel, like the buses, those are actually military carriers. You know what I mean?
Well, they carry civilians. I mean, except that soldiers have been banned from traveling on buses and transport in general. So actually what's happened, there was an announcement made, I think a few days ago, that all combat soldiers are going to be kept in base for the next 21 days. That's something that they did as well during the first wave of the virus, in order to prevent soldiers from being exposed to people who might be carrying it around and about, just because of the high number of people currently infected by the virus. The possibility that soldiers will be infected when they come home for the weekend has become so high that for the combat soldiers, at least, the IDF has decided they're keeping him in the base for 21 days at least. As it turns out, in the previous wave, that 21 days turned out to be a lot longer for many of the soldiers, but at least for now, it's going to be 21 days in base.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Anthony, lawyers acting for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in his bribery case have resigned from their role. I mean, this is just days ahead of the actual start of the case. So why did they resign?
Well, the next hearing is supposed to be, I think, 11 days' time. And this is Micha Fetman, who's been representing Prime Minister Netanyahu, was there at the first hearing that was held on the 24th of May. This is all about money. The reason that the lawyer resigned is all about money, because the Prime Minister has been trying to raise funds. He's been trying to garner donations for his legal fees. And the Attorney General has decided that he's not entitled to raise as much money and get donations in the way that he had originally hoped. And there was one particular person, a tycoon by the name of Spencer Partridge, who was offering to donate 10 million shekels to the legal fees that the Prime Minister is having to bear as part of this case. But the Attorney General has decided that because Spencer Partridge is also due to give evidence in this particular case, that he is an interested party, and therefore any donation by him will not be acceptable, and indeed any donation by anybody will not be accepted, because it's considered there's a possibility that the Prime Minister might be influenced unduly by those people who are donating to him, and therefore this might be considered to be a bribe. And so the Attorney General has decided that the Prime Minister can receive a loan from people. He's also approved even a loan from Spencer Partridge, but only up to a limit of 2 million shekels. And, of course, a loan means that it needs to be repaid, so it's not a donation. So a lot of controversy surrounding the Prime Minister's raising of funds for his legal case. This is clearly something that's not going to end here.
Anthony, is Benjamin Netanyahu not a wealthy man?
Well, of course, the newspapers decided to go into his personal affairs to try to assess what they thought he was worth.
Yeah.
And they came up with this figure of 50 million shekels that they feel is his net worth, based on properties that he owns in Jerusalem and the property that he owns in Caesarea. And so it seems as if, though, he's certainly not short of a bob or two, as the classic saying goes. But most of his wealth seems to be tied up in assets rather than liquid money that he has available to him. Having said that, a normal man in the street is unlikely to go around raising funds for legal fees. That seems to be a relatively unique kind of method of dealing with things. For some reason, Netanyahu feels he's entirely justified to garner donations in order to cope with these legal fees, which clearly are going to be substantial. But one would have thought that he could probably cope with it himself, even if he needs to liquidate one or two of his assets.
Yeah. You know, you should speak to some of our political leaders, because they just get the state to pay. I mean, that should really help him out. Yeah, it's excellent. It's an excellent idea. All right, Anthony, moving on. The Palestinian Authority has indicated its willingness to negotiate directly with Israel. So what has given rise to this change of heart? I mean, it's incredibly good news.
Well, it's a significant change, because over the last 4 or 5 years, the last while that I can remember, the Palestinians have really not been willing to sit down and negotiate with Israel at all, especially under the sponsorship of the U.S. administration, which has been putting this proposed peace plan together. But all of a sudden now, over the last week or two, this is already the second time that Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president, has made a public statement saying he's now willing to sit down and talk to Israel. Of course, his messages have been sent through the quartet rather than through the U.S. administration, the quartet being the four parties, the United States, Russia, the European Union, and the United Nations. They are the four parties to the quartet. And most of Mahmoud Abbas's conversations have been held either through the European countries or, in this particular case, in a conversation that he held yesterday with Russian President Vladimir Putin. My impression is that talk of annexation has changed the landscape. The Palestinians seem to be feeling nervous about the possibility that Israel could potentially annex certain parts of the West Bank, and that the Palestinians will not get a state at the same time, so that Israel could potentially get some gain while the Palestinians don't move ahead with them. And therefore, I think that this seems to, at least in my interpretation, have given rise to the sudden desire by the Palestinians to sit down and negotiate with Israel. I'm not sure how serious their statements are, but it's certainly a change from what we've seen over the last few years.
Wouldn't it be nice, Anthony? Wouldn't it be nice?
Well, I think it would be nice if we managed to get to a permanent status which would be recognized by the world, which would guarantee Israel's borders without questioning whether Israel has rights to certain parts of the land or not, and that people, that we could all survive in peace with one another without the threat of terrorism on our borders. That's, I think, what would be nice. Perhaps I'm a dreamer.
It's quite interesting. On the Chai FM website, we've put up a poll just to try and gauge where people are at. Now, I understand that the poll really doesn't mean much. The reason being is that it's just a conversation. I mean, whether the annexation goes ahead or not, you know, until it's not really even a story until it does happen. And the Arab world seems to be feeling the same way. I don't think that they've shown a lot of, outrage, or that they've voiced disagreement with Israel. It's kind of like a very meh kind of topic. So we put up a poll just to kind of gauge where our listeners are at, and I'll give you the results. So the question is, how do you feel about Israel's plan to annex land in the Jordan Valley? Right? 50% of the people agree with it, Anthony.
My interpretation of the annexation plans is, first of all, apparently the Jordan Valley is now not part of the annexation plan, and that it's a significantly slimmed down version. But if I was to say it in one simple word, my view of the annexation is that it just cements what is already status quo. Israel currently has control of those areas, even though Israeli law doesn't apply in its purest sense. But Israel controls that there are Jews, Israelis living in those areas. So what difference would it make if we took one step further and said, let's apply Israeli law to those areas?
Okay. Shouldn't there be a land exchange? Or land swap?
Yeah, I'm absolutely in favor of a land exchange. I've absolutely no opposition to it. But my concern is that the Palestinians are looking constantly for more, and so therefore they were uninclined to accept the idea of a land exchange, even though it's been discussed extensively, because they feel that by agreeing to a land exchange, they give up on things which are not part of that agreement, and I think they were reluctant to do that.
Yeah.
But absolutely, if they would agree to the land swaps that have been proposed and which are quite well documented, let's do it, absolutely.
All right, so I'll give you some of these other results. So these are the four options. Don't really care. Israel's policy or Israel's. 3.13% of people feel. Okay, so they don't really care. 15.63% of people on this poll don't understand enough to make a decision. Okay. 31.25% disagree with it, and 50% agree. Isn't that interesting?
It's
is
very
it surprising
interesting.
To you?
I think it is interesting. I think it is a little surprising, because I think the general view that people are taking at the moment is that Israel shouldn't do anything which is considered to be unilateral. So something which doesn't have a quid pro quo associated with it.
Yeah.
The irony is that up until now, Israel's been called upon on numerous occasions to do what's called, you know, make a gesture in order to try to try and move things further forward. These gestures are effectively unilaterally giving things up. So when a unilateral step like that is expected or is taken, then little credit is given for it. It's expected as given. Whereas if a unilateral step in the opposite direction is taken, then many people stand up and say, hey, this is not okay. So, yeah, I mean, I understand why people don't think that unilateral steps are not good. I agree that I think, you know, things should move ahead in parallel. Both sides should be giving and taking in equal measure.
Yeah.
But you need two sides to wish to give and take. Before we can actually move it forward.
Okay. Well, now you've got one side that is clearly willing to give and take. Okay, so let's move on, Anthony. Cyclist Chris Froome, he's joined the Israeli Startup Nation team.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fascinating story. The whole team idea of forming an Israeli cycling team came as a huge surprise. Newly Israeli billionaire Sylvan Adams has been behind the cycling regeneration in Israel. He put a lot of money into cycling. He's created this team called Israel Startup Nation. The team was due to have already taken place in the Tour de France this year, assuming that the Tour de France had actually taken place, which of course it hasn't. So unfortunately, the team wasn't able to participate. But Chris Froome is certainly one of the biggest names in cycling. Sure. He's a four-time winner of the Tour de France, and he's now been signed up for the Israel Startup Nation team starting from next season. He was the leader of the Ineos team. His contract with them expires in December. They've decided not to renew his contract, and I guess Sylvain Adams very, very quickly jumped in, took advantage of the fact that Chris Froome was coming out of contract. It's going to be fascinating to see how this team puts how the team comes together, because it's a combination of some very, very experienced, well-known cyclists like Chris Froome, together with some very inexperienced and unknown Israeli cyclists, in an attempt to try somehow to improve the quality of Israeli cycling, and in order also to try to encourage young people across Israel to take up cycling and to become more interested in it. We will see how that all progresses when we get past this particular situation, where unfortunately cycling is really not happening.
Anthony, that is where we leave it. Thank you so much for your time, and it's lovely to chat to you. I just get to hear you every morning. Very
lovely
nice
to chat to you.
You
too. I wish all of you a good fast for the rest of the day, meaningful fast, and Shabbat Shalom, great weekend.
Thank you.
And for those people who do wish to listen in the mornings, I will be back on Monday as usual.
Yeah, have a good weekend. God bless, Anthony.
Take care.
Bye-bye.